Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today, thanks to David French and Alexandra DeSanctis for sipping martinis with me in Jim's absence. We have a full slate of good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all of it brought to you by a brand new sponsor, ManCrates. Right now, you can go to mancrates.com/martini for 5% off. What is ManCrates? Well, stick around and you'll find out. Jim, let's start with our good martini. All of these today related to the president's first official State of the Union address. The one last year wasn't technically a State of the Union, but this one was. A lot to like in this speech for conservatives, especially on policy. Kind of hard to whittle it down to what we thought were the best moments, but we're going to go with two here. First, a montage of all the great economic news that the president can honestly say has taken place here in the first 12 months of his administration.
Since the election, we have created 2.4 million new jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone. After years and years of wage stagnation, we are finally seeing rising wages. Unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low. And something I'm very proud of, African-American unemployment stands at the lowest rate ever recorded. And Hispanic-American unemployment has also reached the lowest levels in history. Small business confidence is at an all-time high.
And he also celebrated the passage of tax cuts. He also talked about the repeal of the individual mandate, which was part of the tax cut bill. But, Jim, I think most people would agree that the most powerful moments of the speech came how Trump tied things to very gripping stories of different people. There was the parents of Otto Warmbier, the American ridiculously imprisoned and essentially tortured to death, we believe, in North Korea. There was the heart-wrenching parents of the two teenagers killed, I believe, in New York by an illegal immigrant. There was the police officer and his wife who adopted the baby of the homeless opioid addict. There was the heroic story of the American servicemen in combat, as well as the Coast Guard's woman who rescued people from Hurricane Harvey. But I think the one that is going to probably stick most with people is the story of the North Korean defector. This clip is about 2 minutes long here, but it's worth it because of the not only the power of this story, but to show you, obviously, all the different evil elements of the communist regime in North Korea.
In 1996, Sung Ho was a starving boy in North Korea. One day he tried to steal coal from a railroad car to barter for a few scraps of food, which were very hard to get. In the process, he passed out on the train tracks, exhausted from hunger. He woke up as a train ran over his limbs. He then endured multiple amputations without anything to dull the pain or the hurt. His brother and sister gave what little food they had to help him recover and ate dirt themselves, permanently stunting their own growth. Later, he was tortured by North Korean authorities after returning from a brief visit to China. His tormentors wanted to know if he'd met any Christians. He had, and he resolved after that to be free. Sung Ho traveled thousands of miles on crutches all across China and Southeast Asia to freedom. Most of his family followed. His father was caught trying to escape and was tortured to death. Today, he lives in Seoul, where he rescues other defectors and broadcasts into North Korea what the regime fears most, the truth. Today, he has a new leg. But Sung Ho, I understand you still keep those old crutches as a reminder of how far you've come.
So, Jim, that story encapsulated so many things. The horrific poverty that the people of North Korea feel as a result of the misguided priorities of the regime, the militant atheism, the horrific torture and repression in so many ways, and, of course, the powerful thirst for freedom. What struck you most about all of what we saw last night?
You know, Greg, I think my boss, Rich Lowry, put it pretty well, that if Trump was like that all the time, he guessed that his approval rating would be in the high 40s. I think it might even be higher. I think, you know, nights like this and the previous joint address to Congress represent Trump at his best. He has a good story to tell, both on the economics and the way his policies work. He has good speech writers. He has a good communications team. Somebody once said, and it's true, Americans are not motivated by numbers and statistics and things like that. They are motivated by stories of people that they can relate to. And every time Trump uses one of those to make the case for his policies, it works very well. The reason I can't get that excited about that is I don't really believe that Trump has turned the corner or become a new person. I think he did a really good job on Tuesday night, and I just know it's a matter of time until he starts tweeting something angrily or something like that. It's Jekyll and Hyde. You have the good Trump and the bad Trump. But so for now, I'm just going to enjoy it. And I think that Americans know North Korea is a bad place. They know that the regime is brutal and crazy. I remember back, I think it was during the Obama years, there was Stephen Colbert or Daily Show did some report, because at one point they were talking about they were launching missiles, and I believe the name of the missile was Long Dong. And everyone started chuckling and tittering and kind of, and they said, like, in a strange way, the wackiness of the North Korean regime kind of covers up how brutal they are. It's so oddball, it's so weird and strange, that we don't really think to compare it to Stalinist Russia, China under Mao, Hitler's Germany. I mean, this is one of those nightmare regimes that threatens its neighbors and utterly oppresses its people. And so it's really good to have that kind of reminder there of the stakes in the current confrontation we're having in the Korean Peninsula. Look, last night was Trump at his best. The question is, how long can it last, Greg?
Till the next tweet, like you said before, is probably the way it's going to be. Let's talk a little bit here in our bad martini now about the Democratic response. Yes, I know there are about half a dozen of them, but the official one came from Massachusetts Democratic Congressman Joseph Kennedy III. That is the grandson of Robert F. Kennedy. He has Barney Frank's old seat in the House of Representatives, and he spoke from a technical high school in River Falls, Massachusetts. And a couple of different clips from this speech, Jim. First of all, his list of alleged grievances against the Trump administration about how this president has made America worse in a number of ways.
We see an economy that makes stocks soar, investor portfolios bulge, and corporate profits climb, but fails to give workers their fair share of the reward. A government that struggles to keep itself open, Russia, knee-deep in our democracy, an all-out war on environmental protection, a Justice Department rolling back civil rights by the day, hatred and supremacy proudly marching in our streets, bullets tearing through our classrooms, concerts and congregations targeting our safest sacred places.
Jim, there's a lot we can dispute there, and also how the Democrats have contributed to some of those things. Here is his argument that the Republicans are the ones pitting groups against one another for political gain.
They're turning American life into a zero-sum game, where for one to win, another must lose, where we can guarantee America's safety if we slash our safety net, where we can extend health care in Mississippi if we gut it in Massachusetts. We can cut taxes for corporations today if we raise them on families tomorrow. Where we can take care of sick kids if we sacrifice dreamers. We are bombarded with one false choice after another. Coal miners or single moms. Rural communities or inner cities. The coast or the heartland.
Not really sure who's ever pitted coal miners against single moms, Jim. We've got the Democrats are the reason that the individual tax cuts aren't permanent. So a lot of demagoguery there. A lot of people said it sounded a lot like an Obama speech. What did you take away from it?
Gee, where to start? First of all, I think if he really was that upset by the government shutdown, he probably should have voted to reopen it. Little details like that tend to get lost in the shuffle as you're getting into high dudgeon there. I wrote about this in the Morning Jolt. First of all, by the standards of the Kennedy family, Joe Kennedy III seems like a decent human being. He, Stanford, Harvard Law, volunteered with the Peace Corps, worked as an assistant district attorney, and perhaps this shouldn't surprise me as much as it did, but Greg, apparently he doesn't drink. Considering the legendary stories of the Kennedys, that's probably a good thing. But all in all, let's face it, if his name was Joe Smith and he had had the same resume, he would not have had cruised through a Democratic primary in central Massachusetts and become a congressman at age 32. This is a guy who has very much benefited from his family's fame and wealth and legendary status in political circles. So when he goes out and talks about how the terrible of a system that only works for those at the very top, congressman, you're one of those people, right? You are one of those people who has benefited from wealth and power and connections and things like that. When he says me too, look, I'm hoping, and if, you know, as far as I know, Joe Kennedy III is a you know, fine gentleman, but you know, honestly, you want to talk about what me too is meant to stand up against? It's everything the Kennedy men used to be, going on for generations. The Kennedys are about equality under the law for everyone who isn't named Kennedy. When it comes to the family, the law doesn't apply to them. And they've always kind of been associated with this entitlement and you know, many would argue corruption in this sense that they were above the law and in a special class. And, you know, even the Catholic Church would hand out annulments to them like a Pez dispenser. I mean, this was always a family that was treated differently by everyone else around them because they were special. And you can't send Joe Kennedy out there to make the argument against elitism and separate treatment under the law and things like that. So the speech was fine. I'm not going to make fun of the either it was a chapstick or he looked kind of, you know, some people said it looked like he had, you know, spittle or drool or something on the sides of his mouth. I'm not going to make fun of him for his appearance, but I'm just going to observe that this whole idea that he represents the future of the Democratic Party and stuff like that. Look, I don't understand how you can fume about the Bushes and other political dynasties and then turn around and say, yay, Kennedys, every time some new young one comes along and, you know, suddenly goes to the head of the pack in the Democratic Party.
Oh, absolutely right. And yeah, the lip thing was a little bit distracting, but so was Trump clapping for himself at various times. So I guess it probably evened out.
Yeah, when it comes to drool or something like that, you want to cut it out. Speaking of cutting it out, so in the mail the other day, Greg, I got this box, and it's got this really, you know, cool look to it. It's got this this image of a guy pounding on an anvil, and it's from Man Crates. It's got Man Crates Projects. Now, Man Crates are these kind of gift boxes full of stuff for the man in your life. And this, I managed to get the knife making box, Greg. I am going to run around looking like Crocodile Dundee. It is unbelievably cool in here. It's got your own little vise, the blade, the wood, sandpaper, all the tools you need. And by the way, perhaps most importantly, lest you think that I'm a really handy guy, a booklet full of illustrations showing me how to do this step by step and letting me know which parts are harder and which parts are easier and, you know, degree of difficulty and stuff like that. It is unbelievably cool. I cannot wait to dive into this. And let me just tell you, Greg, this is, you know, of all the sponsors we've had, this might be the most fun one we've ever had. So mancrates.com is the only place to find awesome gifts that guys love. This is not some cologne sampler or a cheesy mug. Man Crates offers curated gift collections for every type of guy, from the sports fanatic to the home chef to the outdoorsman.
And if you go online, now you can check out classics like the NFL barware crate and the whiskey appreciation crate, or fresh takes on traditional Valentine's Day gifts like the jerky heart or the salami bouquet. That's what you really wanted. Go to mancrates.com, pick the perfect gift, and then wait for that magic moment. If it's you or if it's the guy in your life, he'll fall head over heels when the gift arrives, and he gets to pry the wooden crate open with the included crowbar. What's more fun than that? They have thousands of five-star reviews, and every gift comes with a complete satisfaction guarantee. So here's how you do it. Go to mancrates.com/martini for 5% off. They don't offer a discount anywhere else. Get 5% off right now at mancrates.com/martini. One more time, mancrates.com/martini. Ladies, Valentine's Day is just 2 weeks away. All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim, and back to the State of the Union. Some Democrats decided not to come to the speech, but most of them did. But most of them were not in a very good mood. Nancy Pelosi looked like she had a lemon cough drop in her mouth most of the night. Chuck Schumer didn't look very happy most of the night. But the bizarre thing is, and it's pretty common for the opposition party to not cheer for a lot that the president of the opposite party is touting, but there were several things there that should have been universal good news. And even projects that the Democrats have endorsed in the past that they were either sitting on their hands for or giving very tepid golf claps for. We heard a couple of them in the economic montage, the president touting the lowest ever Black or Hispanic unemployment rates on record. Absolutely no reaction whatsoever from the Democrats on that, even from the Congressional Black Caucus. He also made a pitch for paid family leave, which is not one of our favorite things, but it's been a Democratic hallmark for a long time. Not much of a response. Infrastructure, $1.5 trillion, very tepid response. And maybe a little bit more enthusiasm for trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs, which has been a hallmark of theirs for a long time as well, Jim. So it's one thing to not like the issues that you normally don't like, but when you hate a president so much that you can't even agree with him on the stuff you've always agreed on, that's a problem.
Look, Democrats, we get it. You hate Trump. You've kind of made this clear from the moment he came down the escalator in 2015. Actually, you probably have made it clear back from the birther days. Look, yes, we get it. You can't stand him. You can't stand anything he's saying. When you see the Congressional Black Caucus refuse to applaud Trump, boasting about the lowest unemployment rate amongst African Americans ever, look, we get it. They're saying that's not really Trump's doing. This was a longstanding trend that began during the Obama administration, and that Trump is taking credit for something he had very little to do with. Okay, fine. We get it. But that doesn't mean that it's not true, because it is true that the unemployment rate amongst African Americans is the lowest it's ever been. And I can't imagine anybody would say that's a bad thing. So, yeah, give it at the very least a golf clap, or at the very least, there's a good gift going around of Tim Kaine, the man who almost was our vice president, giving the most sarcastic, begrudging applause I've ever seen. It's very slow. It's very methodical. It's almost the kind that the villain gives when the good guys have figured out his plan, and he's kind of giving this sarcastic, "Yes, you've figured it out, and it was me." You know, but at the very least, you have to at least look like you like it. You mentioned a bunch of policies that Democrats have traditionally supported, Greg. Also in there, it was only one line, and I think there were some folks I talked to out at the Koch winter meeting who were hoping it would be a little bit more than that, but a reference to prison reform, basically anti-recidivism programs, basically an effort to get groups involved in prison so that, you know, you get sentenced to a crime, they start doing things like job training, getting people their GED or high school education, vocational training, mentoring, all the different things to get somebody to not go to jail again. You know, there's been this going all throughout the 80s and 90s. We had this attitude of law and order and lock them up and throw away the key. And look, everybody who does a crime should do the time. They should be punished. The question is, what do you do with these people once they get out? 95% of the people who go into prison are going to get out someday. And if you block them off from getting a job, doing other things with their life, ties to the community, well, then it's much more likely they're going to end up committing another crime again. This was a big issue out there. And, you know, they were very proud of the fact that they've finally gotten, sounds like Jared Kushner is a big advocate of this. And there are some folks in the administration who want to do this in federal programs. This could be a very good thing. This would be the sort of thing you think Democrats would be on board with, but apparently not, Greg, because apparently anything that, you know, Trump talks about, they've decided they don't want to, they certainly won't applaud. And it remains to be seen whether they're willing to vote for it, despite their previous support of these exact same ideas.
Exactly. And they're kneecapping themselves on immigration as well, in addition to their complete rejection of what was a pretty aggressive gesture to the left from Trump last week. Just the fact that they were essentially groaning when he brought up the horrific crimes of MS-13 and that they stood but wouldn't even applaud for the parents clearly devastated by the actions of an MS-13 member, actually several of them, shows that I don't know what they're doing on this issue, but it's probably going to blow up in their face, most likely. Anyway.
So is that our fancy martini or our good martini, Greg?
You can take it in a number of different directions, I guess. The State of the Union is quite a spectacle, and watching the reactions from the Democrats might have been the most enjoyable part of the night. So, Jim, good to have you back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And right now, go to mancrates.com/martini for 5% off mancrates.com/martini. And tune in Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.